Okay, welcome everybody for the June 5th meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. We will begin with roll call and introductions. Beginning on my far left with the distinguished gentleman in the white shirt.
I'm Rob Heen.
Sean Denniston.
Robert Hines.
Sarah Fox.
Alex Gall.
Ann Spencer.
Mike Wright, Clark County Facilities.
Mark, one
second. Holly Chamberlain, Vancouver.
Mark Preston, City of Vancouver.
Jen Bader, City of Vancouver.
Sarah Lamont-Upin, Clark County.
Jackie Camp, Clark County.
Welcome, one and all. Let us begin with the minutes from the May 1st meeting. I give everybody an opportunity, or the commission members, an opportunity to look that over if you haven't had the chance yet. And then I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes whenever you're ready. I think I had one that popped out at me. Where I saw Mother Jones referred to, and I was just wondering if that was meant to be Mother Joseph.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what paragraph that was. So my only comment would be maybe.
Oh, it's at the bottom of page 2, last sentence.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe there was a Mother Jones.
No.
It was an understudy of Mother Joseph.
And we also found another typo. We had city staff member Jason Norris as a staff, I guess, and his name spelled wrong in one of them, so we're correcting that as well.
I had a couple. So at the beginning of Robert's comments, he had a comment about concerned over an overwhelming scale.
Where?
At the top of Robert's comments. Page 3, I'm sorry. So his first, the first thing that he mentioned was a concern about scale.
Oh, okay. But do you want to change it?
Just that he is concerned about scale, and that, you know, I think if you just put an and in there, I think that's just an issue that he brought up.
Oh, just to add it in.
Yeah, to add it in.
Okay. And scale. And about scale.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see, and. Okay.
And then I thought that Sarah made a point in her comments that building A was the bigger issue rather than building B.
What had that?
Well, it was interesting because I looked at that first sentence too, and I thought, well, it wasn't really me asking. Yeah, I was suggesting that it should be a lower building, not asking.
Oh, suggested.
I was suggesting.
Which
they did. Yes, I was surprised. I thought, wow, they actually listened to our comments. That's nice.
Well, they didn't lower A, they raised B.
I thought they lowered it once.
They pushed it back a few feet and then raised B. Mm-hmm.
Any else? Others?
And then the only other thing is in my comments that Mike Trueson said they didn't pursue the unused development potential as a priority. I know there's a lot of discussion there, and it's kind of hard to sum up, but I think that was the key takeaway.
To add that in there?
Yeah.
That choose to say that it wasn't a priority?
Mm-hmm. They didn't pursue it as a priority.
Okay.
I move that we approve the amendment, the minutes as amended.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes remain in session. All right. Next item in business this evening is a public hearing for the nomination to CCH Blair Building in Washougal to the Clark County Heritage Register. So, we begin by asking the commission members if they have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest with respect to this nomination. If you do, please state so now, otherwise I will assume you do not. Okay, if there are no conflicts of interest, we will consider this public hearing opened and begin with the staff report.
Okay, I'm going to read through the report that you have in your packet. The Blair Building, located at 1801 Main Street, Washougal, Washington, is being nominated to the Clark County Heritage Register. It was built in 1925. It's a rectangular, two-story brick commercial building standing at the northeast corner of the intersection of Main Street, formerly B Street and Love, in downtown Washougal. This is one of the oldest buildings remaining in Washougal's traditional downtown core. It has a high level of integrity and is the most intact of all remaining older brick commercial buildings in the vicinity. The period of significant dates are 1925 to 1968, representing the time period of ownership by John and Georgia Blair. The Blair Building is significant for associations with the builder John Edgar Blair, who was active in commercial and political activities in Washougal. It's significant for its distinctive architecture, featuring intricate, artistic, well-preserved brickwork, and for being a rare remaining example of early 20th century commercial buildings in downtown Washougal. If you flip to page 3, I'm going to read through the findings. The Blair Building is locally significant as it is one of the oldest buildings remaining in Washington's traditional downtown core. The Blair Building is the most intact of all remaining older brick commercial buildings in the vicinity and it has a high level of integrity, specifically of ceiling design, materials, and workmanship. The Blair Building created significant dates, again, are 1925 to 1968. That's making it over 50 years old. The site falls into four of the additional categories, 1, 2, 4, and 5. One, it is associated with events that made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of state, national, state, and local history. Two, it embodies the distinctive architectural characteristics of a type, period, style, or method of design or construction, and represents a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction. And criteria 4, it exemplifies or reflects special elements of the county's history. Criteria 5, it is associated with the lives of persons significant in national, state, or local history. So staff is recommending approval of the listing of the Blair Building for the Clark County Heritage Register. And Holly Chamberlain is also here to address any questions. She put the nomination together.
I actually forgot to mention that I toured this building. It wasn't ex parte in any sense as official when Nick Van from BAHP had a FATF invitation to go help with the new property owners to look at it and made it to the they were looking at being federally listed. And so I have toured inside and out this building just for the record.
Would you consider that any kind of
it's nothing like a conflict of interest. I just forgot to mention that at the beginning.
Great. Do we have any questions of staff at the commission?
I have just one question. Maybe this is for staff. Maybe this is for the applicant or the representative. I appreciate how really well documented this really great nomination. But I don't quite see how it's connected to the additional criteria. One, it is associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of national, state, and local history. Maybe that's because there was so much information. But that's the only question that I had, is I didn't quite see that one. The other three are absolutely slammed up, but I just would like to understand that one a little bit better.
Well, I was expecting the owners, and I keep looking out to see if they might still be coming, but I can try to address that. I think it probably depends on how you define broad patterns. It's a little bit of a catch-all definition. I don't think there's a problem with removing it if you're uncomfortable, but I do feel that it
it fits into the broad patterns of the development of Washougal, the development of Clark County. If it's not something that the commissioners are comfortable with, then it can absolutely be removed.
I was assuming it was more along the lines of all the descriptions of the involvement of that family throughout Washougal and Camas area. They're kind of interwoven and passed through the area. That's where I was picking up that connection.
Mm-hmm. Commerce, politics, medicine, law, agriculture. I mean, they really, this was a very large family, and they did have their very broad activities and for many, many years.
When I read it I kind of assumed the broad pattern was sort of the commercial development, mm-hmm. In the 20s of commercial downtowns and that kind of thing, but I kind of have the same question. I find this often to be the case with nomination forms. They state the criteria, but keep it in that general term without relating it specifically to the property being nominated. And so you're left with that question of like, well, what exactly, because the broad pattern is such a catch-all criteria, to relate it specifically of how this property fits what broad pattern of history. And again, I think you could probably choose several. I mean, I think the family one would be more along the significant people line, but I don't know.
But it's also true that a relatively few members of the family were actually connected to this specific building. So, define broad patterns as you wish, narrowly or widely.
I thought it was about that this was a meat market and there weren't very many standing meat markets left, right? It was a single-use meat market before the grocery store came, mm-hmm. So it's a unique contribution to the commercial.
Well, I was never uncomfortable with it. I just don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I buy that. that explains it for me.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Broad patterns, but how local are you talking about? Right? Mm-hmm. What's the importance of the building in the area? Other questions of staff? And I agree with Sean. I thought this was a really good nomination. A lot of information. It'd be great if there were footnotes to kind of tie it into all of the references, but still.
Yeah, I mean, there were more citations than I've seen in any
of it. I put the citations in at the end, as requested at the previous.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the sentence.
I'm defending you. Yes. I was like, oh, I got it.
Yeah. But I meant footnotes as in tying it to the bibliographical references.
Gotcha. The references in parentheses do tie to
I saw that.
Not as completely as a footnote, but that's true.
Yeah.
Were you planning to bring that for the applicant then? Were you planning to get the presentation as the applicant then?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure if we were waiting for the.
Well, I'm hoping they will. Okay.
The applicants had come before us, gosh, about a year ago, maybe more than that, just kind of looking for advice from the commission as they started this project. So I think that worked out really well in terms of the finished product that we came up with, Holly.
One question, and then this might be for the applicant, but the dates of significance seem pretty broad, and wondering why the 1968 date was chosen. I might have missed that in everything. Is it because of that's the 50-year cutoff?
I chose that for the 50-year cutoff because it's significant for architecture.
Okay.
And the significance for architecture doesn't stop just because the original builder was no longer alive at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess that even in 1968 in Washougal, it was still a fairly rare remaining example of a brick building. And that's why I chose that date. Once again, you could tighten up the dates to just have the significance of the people, but I think that undermines the architecture argument a bit.
Okay. works for me.
So I know you're hoping that the Creamers would show up, but you can just consider you the applicants.
Certainly, I thought that they might, well, I knew that they would be able to provide more current information on their progress on the interior upstairs apartments, and I had my questions. Doesn't really exactly impact the nomination, but I just might want to have more information.
Sure. I could speak about that too, actually. I just walked through those apartments.
Great.
I don't. I mean, I remember we had a number of questions when the Creamers came to us the first time. I think everything was really well documented here. It's interesting because you weren't able to identify the specific architect, but you kind of zeroed in on probable architects, and I think that actually happened.
I feel like it's sort of leaving a bit of a trail of breadcrumbs. Unfortunately, the microfilm for the Camus Post does not exist for 1925. Anywhere, and there are only about 5 issues of the Washougal Record on microfilm at the library, and none of them from 1925. So this will now remain one of those questions that I hope I will stumble on someday.
We'll be inspired to.
But like, oh, so close.
Well, it may not have an architect. This
also
era,
very true. Yes, yeah.
This era, and just looking at some of the details, it would not surprise me if this were actually Mason designed. Mm-hmm.
The masonry is very elaborate, and if it was done by Charles Story and Sons, they did other similar buildings in this area. That's why I think they're probably the top candidate for builders, and they would have had the ability to do that scale of building themselves, but I just don't know. But if anybody has any copies of the Washougal Record up in their attic, I can tell you the library would love to have them.
There's a longtime owner, publisher, Zimmerman, do you remember his, in Camus, he actually kept every single copy of the Post Record while he was working there for 60 years. So I kind of wonder what happened when he died a few years back, because...
Well, that was after the papers merged. So prior to the merger, it was just the Washougal Record. And what they told me at the Post is that there was a flood at some point, a lot of the old papers were destroyed. They didn't even know if they'd ever had the Washougal Record. So, anybody has it?
I might be able to follow up on that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Any more questions of the applicant? If not, I'll open it up to public comment. Is anybody in the room who would like to speak?
I would just like to add that if you haven't had a chance to see this building, I really recommend a little trip to Washougal. It's a very, very beautiful building. Modest, but just lovely, lovely brickwork.
Yeah. I could say, too, with the apartments, when I walked through, they were in the demo stage. What was this, like 2 years ago, I think?
They've been working on it for a long time. A lot of sweat equity.
But those are really amazingly small little rooms that they started off with. So the fact that they've ended up with 4. But it was also just amazing to see these little tiny kitchens that were fit into. I mean, they were smaller than a closet. Their bathrooms were tiny. I mean, it was just I wish they could have retained just one of them, maybe. But yeah, obviously not economically feasible. But it was very cute where they had them all built up there. And I know that they worked hard to try to retain some of those features, like keeping the closet doors. And they were talking about the flooring. How they could do that. So it seems like they came up with a good solution with the windows.
Yeah. And actually, there's a great story about the windows, which I will tell since they're not here. Sorry, looking at the window. Heidi Kramer had literally been planning on tearing out the multi-light windows the next day after she went to a window workshop and decided to save them. Mm-hmm. So it was that close, and they're just really great windows.
I remember Nick was really talking to them about those windows too.
Absolutely.
And I have a question about that awning. Was that always there, or was that I think they're the photo from the 40s. Yeah. And is that a, is that the same window, or is that a separate window that's above the awning, or is that a continuous?
It's a continuation. Okay. Those are the, you know, those are the transoms that they opened up. There are no historic photos that I found that's one at the time of construction. So the awning dates at least to the 40s.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure that it was original. Could have been. It's that, I don't know. Also, we'd love to see any photos of downtown Washougal from the 20s that you might have.
Okay.
So we had no comments from the public. So is there any last minute comments from the commission or anybody in the room? We'll consider the public hearing closed, and I'll turn it over to the commission to deliberate.
Complete nominations make this very easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a lot of unanswered questions. All right, we have a motion to approve as is.
I'll second the motion.
Motion has been seconded. Any discussion necessary? If not, we will vote on the motion to approve Blair Building to the Clark County Heritage Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Blair Building is now in the Clark County Heritage Register. For efficiency.
We've got the certificate prepared, but we've been bringing it, so we'll have to get you to sign it.
Okay.
And then we'll get the owners to sign it and record it. McClack.
Update the app.
Update the app.
are they planning to move forward with the national registry of the state?
I'm not sure.
Are they looking to put it on the national register?
I don't believe they have any plans to do that.
Either for the state or
maybe the state, but they wouldn't need to do any changes, probably the nomination right now.
Thanks.
Okay, let's move on to the new business here. And we're actually ahead of schedule. Lewisville Park Maintenance Shelter.
So, yes, we've got
Michelle and Dan here.
Michelle's not here, so we've got Dan and Mike.
Okay.
Facilities with Clark County. So I'm going to just lay it over to them to talk about the issues of this building. It is on the Clark County Heritage Register.
The park
is. This is a non-contributing building per the nomination. And it sounds like there's some maintenance issues or issues with the state of the building, so I'll have Dan explain.
It houses the park department maintenance group. There's office, kind of office, old office building, their lunchroom area, and facilities does maintenance out there. We were called out because the floor was sagging, and our carpenters went and opened the floor up, and we discovered significant dry rot in the timbers under. There's pictures in there that show it, but there's no foundation under it. It was just built out of timbers with concrete pads poured underneath it, dirt right up against it. So there, the floor's getting so bad in there, and there was even mold issues. We had it looked at just to make sure that there wasn't, you know, fungus and whatever. And it was, everything appeared to be okay. But the Parks Department management would like to rebuild it or tear it down, put a modular in there, someplace to replace it. It's beyond repair. So we were just looking for directions on what we can and cannot do out there. Is that, that's what the Park Department is asking.
Yeah. So the background on this, Jackie, you said this is on the National Register, correct?
National and local.
And local mm-hmm. register, mm-hmm. but the maintenance buildings are not listed as contributing features.
Right, yeah, right. So in the nomination, which I've had linked to
correct.
For you to look at, shows kind of a list of buildings, which ones are contributing, which are non.
And they're mostly because of the association with the WPA and the rustic and all that. Right. But the buildings are considered compatible.
Right.
So in terms of that, the look. And that was, you know, when I read this and I saw that the idea of the modular building being put on it on the same site, that sort of struck me as maybe not the way to go.
Yeah, it was just an option,
yeah.
You know, cheap option to get the crew back into a building there. So.
And then also, but keeping the building as is and just continuous use sort of seems like a liability issue.
It'll continue to rot until it's part of the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I was concerned more about the placement of a new modular. To me, it seemed like the only option would be to demolish the building because, like you said, if you leave it there and you don't use it, it's going to become a hazard mm-hmm. at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But where would a, I guess I'd be more concerned about the site location of a new modular so that it doesn't detract from the rest of the parks or any of the historic structures out there. So I wasn't sure what sort of review that would go under.
It would be a sort of, I guess it would technically be a waiver, and then maybe it's a dual because if they're going to demolish one mm-hmm. and put a new structure up there, it could come before you for a certificate of appropriateness. So usually with demolitions we call it a waiver, but with anything else that's a change or that impacts a local significant features or something like that would have to come through for a certificate of appropriateness, so it might be kind of a twofer.
Really easy stuff. That
clarifies everything.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me is the same thing as, you know, a modular or new construction, you will be dealing with constructing something that can get the certificate of appropriateness. So that's something to consider in the approach. Nothing is beyond repair. Some things are beyond repair that's worth it. But one of the advantages of this is that it is already compatible, and so if you take the repair route, you know that you'll end up with a building that serves the purposes, hopefully that it serves the purposes and it is compatible. So there is an argument to be made for even extensive repair that verges maybe even on reconstruction. That'd be my only, piece of advice. There might be some issues of, preserving the recent past, even though this is outside of its period of significance, but I don't think that those are big issues. But you might find somebody who's really gung-ho on 60s editions, I don't know. But I think that choosing a path that is going to get you to an end result that is going to be compatible with this park is probably the biggest thing. And whether that's demolishing and reconstructing, constructing something new, that's the thing that I think should really drive the decision besides, of course, the economics.
The way that the dry rot and mold has, well, not mold, I'm sorry, the way the dry rot has worked through the beams into the exterior walls.
Oh, it's even in the walls.
Yes.
Yeah.
And see, that's the problem, is it's more than opening up the floor and putting in a new foundation.
Mm-hmm.
It's worked its way into the exterior walls. So at some point, you basically are in a situation where you just take it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you rebuild in the same place, or place something in a different location, but they're really financially, it would be not a good choice to try to repair because of the amount of rot that's gotten into the exterior walls.
You'd basically just be propping up the roof and building a new building under it.
I'm not even going to guarantee the roof is worth it. I mean, there's options. I think what we're looking for now is kind of a direction of what may be acceptable. And I understand the whole modular appearance out there. I don't know what funding will be available through the park system to reconstruct. But one of the options would be to tear it down and start from the ground up in the same footprint, attached to the same shop building. But obviously, and even with the consideration, I suppose, of of choosing materials, exterior materials that blend with the rest of the buildings in the park. During that period, there would still be a modular involved because we've got to provide some location for these people to work.
Temporary modular would not be an issue.
And I don't want to speak for the Parks Department because the representative isn't here, but...
No, I think that if you did take this down, you've got a good guide of what is compatible. It doesn't have to be exactly like this. It just has to be something compatible. And you know that this is, so that gives you a good starting place, but it could potentially be different. It doesn't. I think once you've taken it down, reconstructing a 60s maintenance building isn't some, you know, great historic reconstruction event. Mm-hmm. And so I think the existing building gives you some cues on what works in that site, and you can use that to guide the design that you do, because if you're going to be building a new building, of course you want to build something that really suits the current purposes.
Yes, and it may change. It may change slightly because of the current purposes and usage versus when it was. You know, it may get a little longer. It may get a little quieter. I guess one of the questions that comes to mind, just as a quick example of construction, if it goes that way, is the shake roofs on these buildings are a maintenance nightmare. You know, much more harder can you make for yourself than to put a shake roof in a woods, you know, in a forest? So, for instance, since this building has been determined not to be on the register, but we wanted to look like it blends, what kind of options would be available just to say on the roof? Could you put a metal roof on of a brown tone that blends with the rest of the buildings in there? That's the sort of thing that we will end up needing some guidance in the future as we move forward. It's just an example.
So my question is, are there any other modular buildings in the park at this point in time?
No.
Not to my
memory. So this would really be the first.
Yeah.
And the park is listed as one entity. It's not the individual buildings. It's not a district. It's the park. So it's in a sense, it's sort of a landscape in addition to the built environment out there. And so, you know, thinking about placing a modular out there and how that would alter the landscape, right, and all of that, I think, you know, does give the argument. And I think
there's things you could do.
With a
modular that you could basically hide it from view too. I mean, you could do things like walls or fencing or landscaping. So that's why I said, are we, you know, is there consideration if modular, the idea of a modular building is going to be more permanent than temporary? That could be something that I think we should consider too, because again, its purpose isn't not the tourist or the visitor purpose. It's really very much for the people that work there and their comfort. And I wouldn't suggest putting them into, you know, a building that isn't, you know, warm or cold or, you know, I mean, that has the right environmental aspects either. So. So yeah, I wouldn't close it just to only a new building discussion, but more of how the site's planned.
Yeah, I think the economics, I mean, if it's going to be considerably cheaper to go with a modular solution,
that's kind of why the first thought was you can get them quickly and easily to set up, you know, versus going through the big permit process with the county getting, you know, new construction site. That was just one of our thoughts.
So when we're talking about, you know, differential in the economics, are we talking 3x, 4x, and how much more expensive?
Without having dollars, you know, that we've done some, you know, study on, I'm guessing that a modular would probably be at least no more than a third the price of new construction, probably less than that.
Well, there is, and you can rent them versus buying them. Okay. I mean,
most likely in a situation like this, I'm speaking for people that aren't here. It was determined that a modular would work with landscaping, screening, whatever. It would probably be thought of as being a more of a permanent, you know, situation. The county would probably buy a modular. There's a lot of permitting you have to go through for setting a modular up. You can't leave it on the tires and all. You have to put a foundation that can be dropped down on. It would have utilities, plumbing, whatnot for restrooms. But we haven't really entertained anything at this point. Our first step was to find out if we would be allowed to look at options versus it has to be built in the historical manner of some of the other buildings and had to have the look of that. I totally understand the matching of a certain appearance, but that was our first step, is to find out what we would be allowed to entertain in moving forward.
I think if you keep your focus on, it sounds like this building is a loss, the standards for new construction on a historic site, I think that is what can really guide you, because that'll tell you what the shape that it needs to take. And there is also the element of we're here, and so if you come to us early with some conceptual options, hey, we're looking at this one, we're looking at this one, here's a modular with sitting in this kind of screening, we can help you with those contextual issues and
so
help you.
Are you saying you're open to a modular solution then?
I'm
understanding that it's probably one third.
My issue with the modular is it'd be hard to make it compatible, but it's not impossible, and there's some really smart designers out there. It's not going to be your cheapest life cycle option. Modulars are actually more expensive on a life cycle basis. So, but upfront cost rules the world. So I wouldn't say that a modular is out of the question. It'll be more difficult to make it compatible with the landscape, but that doesn't mean it's impossible.
Yeah, that's the thing. A modular can be, there's nothing that says a modular can't be anything you want it to be. I've mm-hmm. done some that are quite elaborate. You would never know. I mean, have had people inspect them and not know. And I'm in agreement in general with everybody else is saying. I focused immediately on the modular and what it is and where it's placed, much more than saving this. And I agree with you. From both of the few pictures I've seen here, like this one with the probe just totally shoved in. Did you have to get it out with a pair of pliers?
No. All we had to do is go like this. You know, that's how soft it is underneath there.
You'd end up with a reconstructed building with a few pieces that were left from the old one. So I don't see any point to that. You know, if there's
it really is fair to say that the existing building is a total loss. Just because of the extent of the dry rot. I suppose there's a couple of sheets of sheetrock and a couple of interior walls that we can salvage, but everything else on the outside is gone.
And then you can learn your lesson. You know, your next building needs to have a foundation, and it needs to not have concrete draining the surface right against the building.
I take no responsibility for the construction of this building.
We're not around.
So one thing that I would suggest, and I don't know if it already has been, but before you demolish it, to have somebody document the building, just for posterity's sake, because once it's demolished, it'll be erased. You know, I mean, there is some documentation in the National Register form, but in terms of sort of getting some good photographs of all the elevations and maybe just a quick architectural write-up of it, the Washington Historic Property Inventory, if it's listed on there, it doesn't put any restrictions on it in terms of demolition or anything like that. It's just an inventory for future things.
Looking at that picture there that shows a little pickup, that front portion there is this crew area is attached behind that. So if we take that section out, the back of this building will be, I'm not sure what's there, open. The two buildings are connected, a wall between them. So we'll have to do something.
Yeah, the building on the front page,
that's the one
stays.
Behind it. Yeah.
That is a shop structure.
That building, it looked like it's a pole barn, but at least it's got post poured in concrete, and there is looks like a halfway decent concrete pad poured around it. So that looks... You know, it's not like it's got enclosed flooring with no air venting in there where you get the dry rot. So, And you can see that floor, like in that picture, the floor's about that thick. It looks like it's been layered over many times through the years to keep it from bright rot. And put another layer of flooring on.
Oh, it's soft. Let's put another plywood on.
That's pretty much what you see, yeah.
It sounds like modular solutions that are on the table.
We can sure, yeah.
Yeah, they're on the table. You know, we can work with colors and the screening.
Mm-hmm. And we, Dan and I, won't be making the final decision which way they want to go. We're kind of representing the Parks Department at this to get an idea of what will or won't be acceptable. We'll go back and meet with them and again, I have no knowledge of what their funding and budget availability is, and it'll be their determination as to how they want to proceed based on the information we give them from this meeting. But what I'm hearing and what I think is a fair statement is whichever way they decide to go, based on their funding, we need to come back to this committee with some ideas, some pictorials of what it may look like. If they go with modular, where it would be placed in relation to the part of the building that stays. How it would be viewed from the main entry road that comes in, just so you get an idea of what people would see. I mean, for most of the time when it comes to maintenance buildings, they're out of sight, out of mind. People don't see them. This particular one is just a short distance from the main entry of the park off to the right, I think it is, and people go by it when they enter the park. And so I totally understand an appearance, and if modular is acceptable and they can present something that everybody thinks, yeah, this could work, there's still screening issues. It should be screened in such a way that it's just really not noticeable. Yeah.
And I wouldn't characterize it as something that you have to do or something that you need to do. Our ordinance certainly doesn't require it. I think it's a good idea because that sort of thing could save you time and money down the road by getting an early view of what does the commission think. So it's don't want to make you think that there's some extra regulatory step that you have to meet, but just that it would be a good idea for everyone involved.
Well, to me, it's better to get a buy-off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you know what direction we're going, rather than us to assume we understand what you said, go out and do something, and then somebody comes in and say, why did they paint it bright green? Or why did they paint it yellow? Or, you know. So we would rather work with you than to make assumptions and then have somebody have issues later.
Yeah, well, the point you just made about it being located at the entrance of the park.
Near the entrance, yeah.
That's important because that does contribute to the character of the appearance when you enter, right? As opposed to, you know, secondary standards. If it's tucked away way in back, there's less room for the changes. So that does matter. Is it important that if a modular is placed there, it be near the front of the park? Does that serve some type of operational benefit or?
We'd have to talk to the Parks Department. I'm assuming that they would prefer that only because their shop building is right there where they store a lot of their equipment, work on things.
The point is that because it's right there at the front and it, you know, contributes to the character and the overall feel when you enter the park, that kind of raises the level of scrutiny that will be placed on it.
How many square feet is this? I think this is
right. Boy, I would say it's maybe 30 by 15. It's not real big at all.
Yeah,
no, it's not much like this room.
I wanted to kind of
kind of emphasize what you said about the life cycle cost of those things really not being very good. I've done lots of repairs and so forth, scopes of repair for ones that have been used past kind of their expected
lifetime. You mean 15 years?
Often less than that. And, you know, on something like this, you know, the proportion of the building that's going to be the foundation of the plumbing and utilities and so forth is a pretty big chunk of the building in general. So, and there's nothing cheaper to build than a light wood frame box with a truss roof on it. So, and if you guys are going to be operating this in perpetuity, I wouldn't dismiss it doing this thing conventionally framed, because then it'll be a simple matter. You can control the roof pitches, you can control the materials a little bit easier, because you're going to get pushback from the modular people. They're going to want to do it the way they always do it. So.
Well, rent a modular while it's being built, they'll get their piece. Now, personally, I would prefer to see it leveled and rebuilt, you know, on its location as a permanent structure, because I think that's typically the way we like to see things. We don't like to do things with the idea, well, it'll last 20 years. You know, we want to see things last a lot longer than that. I can see the shape, the size possibly getting a little larger to meet their actual needs, not, well, this is what we have to make it work. That's what I would prefer to see. I just can't speak for their financial situation.
May I, so when you guys speak with the park staff, so just so everyone's clear on the same page, there's a couple options depending on their timeline, right? So coming back before the commission with some options that are more kind of concrete, like reconstruction is this, and we look at the budget, and here's that, or we're looking at a modular that we might place here, showing that is another meeting, right? But whenever they're ready to move forward with an actual proposal, that would be another hearing. So I just want to make sure that they understand that it depends on what their timing is. If they would like to come back, that'd be probably two meetings, right? Instead of, if they decide that they don't have the timing for that, then they come with whatever proposal that they come to and it's bring before the commission, and the commission decides at that point. Mm-hmm.
So, right, so there's two options. Come back with some information that can be shared, and you can say, yeah, we really like that, we really don't like that. And then come back with the final proposal, or come back with those options at one time and have the commission decide.
Right, you come back with a proposal that they would have to deliberate on and decide on. So it's kind of, the, you know, depending on what part of the needs to have happened. So, and I can, of course, talk to them or answer any questions they have about that problem.
Well, there's going to be some professional services that they're going to have to get involved with to put that all together.
Feels like it. I, from a personal standpoint, I feel like I would like to take a field trip out there and just kind of take a look at,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
the context of the building with the other buildings and the, mm-hmm, you know, what's going on out there.
It's kind of tucked, you know, there's the big caretaker's house. That's the first thing you see. And that is very nice and, you know, gives you that park feel.
Log cabin or whatever, yeah.
You know, log cabin thing. And the maintenance shop is kind of tucked behind and off to the side of it, but it's still visible when you drive by, when you drive through. It's not completely like just out there.
Yeah, I can't say the times I've been in the park, I've been looking for the maintenance shed.
It works. It works.
Yeah.
Hey.
All
right. So we will meet with the Parks Department and talk to them. Modular isn't out of the question.
You can't move a lot of bushes.
But it's all in how it's going to be.
It's this portion of
approach and how the appearance is.
And it's got different.
It's not my preference.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that they're interested in my preference.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. You have a good evening.
I'm going to let Eric explain the stair proposal. I have interested architecture
drawings. Sure.
Mr. Speaker.
Former commission member.
This is Melinda with my office. Does everyone have a set of drawings? You got bigger ones if you're old like me. So the Carnegie Library is 118 years old now, and the concrete stairs that are out in front of it appear to be original. There are some old black and white photographs of the building, and they seem to resemble what is out there now. The stairs are a potential hazard. They do not meet a code minimum for rise and run. I think they were built back when people had smaller feet. And in addition, the door that enters the building currently swings out. Originally it was an in-swinging door, but currently swings out. And as it swings out, a person stepping over the threshold has less than a foot until the first step down. And there are two steps down before a mid-level landing. And then the steps continue down toward the sidewalk. we've been asked to look at improving the stairs to make them accessible, accessibility compliant, and then also to give them more life. The building is accessible through a rear door elevator that is at grade, that serves the floors. So there's no need to provide a ramp in this particular case. So what we've put together are three options. And if you, when you're looking at the drawings, essentially existing conditions are drawn in gray, a light gray color, and then the new construction is proposed in the darker lines. Options A and B both take the approach of leaving the existing stairs. The stairs can be sacked and patched for cosmetic purposes to get rid of the spalled concrete and things like that. But the idea being that the pedestals that have the tall lamps on them, light fixtures on them, and then the cascading stairs would all stay. And then superimposed on that in option A would be some kind of an easily removable, although firmly anchored, metal stair assembly. The idea that it would be sitting very gently on the existing stair and could easily be removed sometime in the future. Option B takes that concept of sitting on top of the existing stair and actually casts it in concrete. So option A would have a greater a contrast by being a steel construction versus option B would be a concrete construction. Option C is tear it all out and put in a new stair. The greatest challenge, as I see, for any of these options, is that I think the defining features of the stairs are the plinths that are on the side that the light fixtures sit on top. Those plinths are fairly short, and because of the ADA required landing of at least 5 feet at the top of the stairs, options A and B, in order to expose those plinths and not overwhelm those plinths, options A and B would have to be narrower. And I think for many people that might look quite dissonant. There's philosophies of interventions, but I think for most people it'd be like, wait a minute, why is that so narrow?
The width of the stairs?
Yeah, of the new stair. Yeah, whatever new stair. So, in option C, since everything must go, if you look at the section in the drawing here, lower right-hand side or right-hand side, you'll see a dashed set of lines that with a note that says remove existing plinth. And then the new plinth with the salvaged light fixture would be approximately a foot taller than the old plinth. So it could be cast in an identical fashion with the identical profiles of the existing pedestals and plinths, but it would be taller and therefore would have somewhat of an impact on the exterior aesthetic of the building. It could be held back by no more than 4 inches and still meet code requirements. Lastly, the accessibility standards do require handrails. They also, in a case like this, would require guardrails, 42-inch high guardrails. So we're facing a whole lot of metal up in front of this building, which was never historically there. There were never handrails there in the original 1910 construction. So there you have it. It's kind of an ugly spot to be in. I would just add, just by way of note, we run this past Nicholas. I always forget Nicholas's last name.
Van.
Yep, Van, thank you, at DAP. And he, you know, I don't think he was taking the worst of all options, but he suggested that option C was the best approach to start with, for what that's worth. I'd love to say that we have a great option here and then this is the winner, but nothing here is perfect.
Option A to me didn't feel like the right option, even though I can understand why that was suggested. It's kind of like the in my world and planning, kind of the no option, you know, do nothing option. Because the whole feel of entering the building would be different if you're walking up metal stairs. It just, the whole feel would be different. And people would always be wondering, is this temporary? What is this, you know? So I don't think that would ever be a good solution. The option B, I think between the B and C, it's more of a out of my realm, where you're talking more architectural preference more than anything, because I could see... and maybe even a budget standpoint, depending on what kind of budget they have, because I think it could still look good. Option B could look good. I think you could even choose to make that difference in the stairs, how it would definitely differentiate itself cascading down the sides of that building is something where you might put planters or some kind of, you know, feature where it would look almost purposeful, you know, moving forward. If that was the choice that they went with. So those were kind of my feelings when I looked at all the options. So I guess I'd lean for B, just because then you at least retain some of that character and you could kind of work with it to make it not look like it, to make it look like it was almost a good feature by adding planters or some sort of dressing to it, I guess, is what, if there's a better word for that.
For actually the same reason I went with C. I think that C is, I wouldn't even call it the least bad. I think it's even a little bit better than that. Because no matter what we're looking at a permanent solution, at least relatively permanent solution. And so A and B would have a much larger impact on the character of the building as a whole than C does. Because I think you've done a pretty good job of minimizing the impacts on the character of the building with the design of C, even though some changes, you know, have to be made for modern standards. And so I think that C preserves the character of the building the most, because having this weird narrow stair going up the middle would really change the way that the building reads. That staircase would not read as the grand staircase that it is now. You know, if you had to dress it up with planters, that would also be a little bit odd, because that's not something that a Carnegie Library would have, you know, had in the past, or a grand staircase would have. And I think that in general, every part of the building has a life cycle, and you have to have a really good reason to artificially extend the life cycle of a material. Something has to be important about it, or special about that actual material. And, you know, it's not like Lincoln was shot on these stairs or anything. You know, the actual material of these stairs is really, is at least from the documentation, is not important. The form of the stairs is what's important. And I think that option C maintains the form of the stairs the best of the options. Without that, you know, the concrete has a life, you know, a service life of 75 to 100 years. So it's not surprising that it's failing. And the current staircase actually discourages use of the main entrance. And so encouraging use of the main entrance, I think, is a very good thing because that preserves the historic function of the staircase. I think the only thing that concerns me about C, and this is a question for you, is it looks like originally there's 13 steps and the new design has 12. And I know when I read through the National Register nomination, there was some inclination that 13 steps was significant, but it wasn't documented. Or maybe it's significant, maybe it's not. Do the rise calculations make doing 13 steps impossible?
No, 13 steps would be possible.
So I think that since we don't know whether 13 steps are significant or not, and if we can do 13, then we should probably just go ahead and do 13. that's also part of minimizing the impact of this intervention. But besides that, the plinth being raised, that does have an impact on how the building reads, but it's not a big impact. I think that the trade-off is worth it.
Yeah, that was my question, is whether the plinth, how those appear. Have you done any kind of rendering with the whole that elevation?
We haven't, and a foot really would only be noticeable, I think, by a trained eye.
Yeah,
we certainly would never propose to take those plinths right up against the face of the pilasters. Mm-hmm. That would make no sense whatsoever to cover a foot of pilaster, which is in perfectly good shape. And I think there's a way to express that gap so that it's obviously it's not even a reconstruction, a new construction. Mm-hmm. If I may, I think the question of veracity is what plays in to my mind. And this is not to in any way target this idea of the 13 steps. We don't know why, so why would we, right? And I think... other thoughts. I think you've all been into the 1946 edition to the library, which is we stripped off all the board, left the furring, left this clay tile, left the glass block. I'm an architect, so I get thrilled by stuff like that. And I was lucky that Susan Tissot also was thrilled by that stuff. And so we have what I think is a pretty remarkable space that was quite sanitary and boring when we started working on it. But that kind of exposing of construction techniques, it's a little reminiscent of talking about the Washougal building. We look at that great craftsmanship when craftsmanship was great. But today's construction, going back to 1946 or even going back to 1910, they didn't always make the best choices, right? Now, this concrete of these stairs has only fine river rock aggregate. It's kind of concrete that's not done, hasn't been done since the 1920s, and certainly after the post-war years. So those are the subtle things that I think are, that's the veracity, that's the truth. And when we try to take the truth and reconstruct it in plastic, what are we doing? So that's just my philosophy for whatever that's worth, and I think that's part of the consideration of what makes sense. I realize that's very intellectualized, and I realize that the average person going on a field trip to that museum is going to be like, what the hell, right? But if you have a nice little sign, maybe it explains what the hell. So.
I think that's why option A doesn't make sense.
Oh, option A is the most glaring.
That's the point going on.
Yeah, look like it's perpetually under construction.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, those stairs had Abraham Lincoln's blood in them.
Well, put in glass. Those would be glass stairs.
Yeah, we wouldn't do anything at all.
They're just photos. Yeah.
So, Rob, you're not off this commission yet.
Yeah.
I want to pick your brain while we still got you.
Yeah, I think I'm with Andrew and Sean on this. The first two options, the word intellectualized, is what occurred to me there, where you're kind of crossing off the preservation criteria, you're leaving simply concrete, you're providing the separation and so forth, but you've stripped the sort of context of that design decision and completely neutralized the design intent and kind of done some violence, I think, to the building in a way that just that isn't even in play in an approach like C, where you really try to reconstruct it with some of the design intent left. So my own bias is
pushing really strongly towards the a C approach.
Mm-hmm. So no one has any love for B at all. I at least oppose planters.
Well,
actually, Sarah, it's because you said planters.
That was it? Okay. Well, I don't know what else to do with it. I mean, I'm thinking you walk up to the stairs and you see some going up really strange, you know, so what do you do with that? It's a little, but I didn't want to, you know, limit this if the museum was still considering, wanted some options.
You guys get to make the decision on this at your next meeting.
Yeah, so I think option B is an option just because you do preserve some of the original design and materials there. You're not moving the plinths or anything like that. And, you know, yes, it changes the way you feel, but you can also see some of the original characteristics there. And, you know, the addition, you could easily, perhaps not easily, quality of your own imagination, but you can kind of see the original design, but it comes through the addition that's there. So I think for that reason, B is desirable. I understand the argument in favor of C, but I still think if I were to walk up to it and we go with C and I'm looking at it, I still think I would notice the difference in the building and the overall character and the approach.
Yeah, I think, as I said, the trained eye, if you know what you're looking for. Yeah.
Did you say that the existing stairs are not original?
We believe that they are, based on the type of concrete that's exposed.
Okay.
Yeah, from the looks of those stairs, it can go either way.
In that earlier conversation, we've been told that almost all of the libraries have this strange kind of design of kind of a jump-off point rather than a landing, right? They're all kind of built like that.
They were all pretty much the same building.
Yeah.
Steps to knowledge.
Yeah.
That you're supposed to struggle a little with.
So we preserve some of those original steps of knowledge.
Well, you know, it depends because some of the buildings, like the one in Walla Walla, it's not up on a rise like this one is, so they don't have those big sweeping front steps. So I think it was also where they built it, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you read the National Register nomination, they talk about there isn't a high level of consistency. And if you look at Carnegie libraries on outside of Washington, you see greater variability. Outside of Washington, they look more like, they more often look like these, like the one that we have. So that probably says something about the budget that was available to do it. Now, I really do think if you put a set of stairs on top of the historic stairs, you will do more to lose the form and the reading of the building, even though you kind of might be able to look through it to see what was there originally. I think that is a bigger difference from the original than reconstructing in a slightly different way.
And I agree. And of course, we're creating history here, and that's just gonna, it's a very strange thing. To
And in the future, they should have a better salting policy so that these stairs last longer than 100 years.
Better what? Salting?
Salting policy.
Oh, yeah.
This is sort of the big issue with brick. The kind of salt that you choose for the icing will have a big impact on the longevity of both the stairs and the brick.
I think the biggest problem is safety.
Right, that's the reason to replace them.
It is.
Yeah. And they look
bad condition, really.
Well, we've skim coated them with more concrete that's now crumbling off.
Yes.
So
as an able bodied person, I've almost fallen out of that building just because you're not paying attention. You're looking behind you when you go to take a step.
So, Eric, were you on the email stream when our facilities people were proposing maybe we change the door so that it swings in instead of out?
Right, was the original design for the building.
So I don't see how the fire official would let you in.
Well, I haven't run a code analysis, but I agree. I don't think you can because it's an A occupancy. You have a much higher load. You're going to have two outswinging doors.
Okay.
Just my gut, without running the numbers.
And the leeway that is given to historic buildings ends right where life safety starts.
Well, yeah, you don't want people piled up there and a beautiful brand new set of stairs.
a little while ago, that door didn't have the push bar to get out because yeah. I would go to meetings there and someone had to come with the key and let you out. It's like, this is like a huge safety issue that you can't get out of the building.
It sounds like a club in New Jersey to me.
So I had to put the push bar in so that you could at least have an emergency exit. So
thank you.
So it sounds like maybe the door swinging in is probably not going to be.
I think the final issue is that the deterioration, now that this falling has started, it's not going to stop. Mm-hmm. There is no preventing this falling from continuation except for encapsulating it in an impervious material like plasticine. Mm-hmm. So if you do a set of stairs on top of this set of stairs, and my best guess would be 10 to 15 years, you'll be coming back because you have to reconstruct everything. Because the original material has, at that point, deteriorated to the point where it is no longer salvageable.
The area that would be exposed in option B.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, of course, brings up the whole intellectualized question of weathering of buildings and whether weathering is... weathering is a good thing for an historic structure, or we have to, spray coated the, candy apple red for the 1955 Chevrolet.
Where are we on the HVAC design?
When I was working with or speaking with Mike Schramm, he actually has asked that Rob, the contractor, talk with a subcontractor, mechanical subcontractor, okay. and evaluate options.
Okay.
I think it's to keep the costs down, rather than paying an expensive professional.
Okay, so because I was hoping we could bring both the HVAC and the stairs back next month at the same time.
I don't know where we are.
Okay, I'll follow up, Mike.
And Jan, a quick question for you. Now, obviously, these three options have significant costs. Differentials. What that is, we don't know yet. We haven't really costed things out. But, Jan, is it fair to say that, not that money is no barrier, but is it fair to say that the best option is the one that we need to be pursuing?
I think so. We've got one opportunity to do this right, and I think we should go with the best option, not at that cost, unless it's a giant difference. Cost shouldn't really be the driver on this.
Okay, good. Yeah, good.
Well, and even then, when you talk about an institutional owner, I do think that A or B will probably be a more costly solution in the long run. Because you're going to do this intervention, and then in a certain time in the future, you're going to do a whole new intervention.
So there you have it, Eric. I hope he made your life
easier. Yeah, did he get clear direction?
You're down to two.
I'm just going
to
ignore what everyone said.
I think we took A off the table.
A's off the table. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jan, having the support of Nick?
Yeah.
That's going to be
important part
of this. So. What do we see, like a two against two, so to speak? But then you got the big boy of the state saying, hey, I want C, that's where we're heading.
You don't hear a ton of love for B either, so it probably got a pretty good direction. So, yeah.
I think that's the way we're going.
So we'll come back next month with the final design.
We can have discussions about handrails.
Do you want to talk about handrails?
It's going to be horrible. It's going to be horrible.
It's too bad.
At
least it'll be better than the one that's on there now where you have to kind of swing your body around it to get in the door.
We will be able to have our Photoshop image that will show that design and hopefully have some options for the guardrails, handrails, because those will be horrible. Those will be our biggest hurdle.
What's the difference between the guardrail and the handrail? The
guardrail has to be 42 inches high. Handrail is 34.
Okay.
And it has to be, you can't have any openings greater than 4 inches here.
Oh, right. It has to be.
Such a horrible problem.
And that's not
depicted. No, because I couldn't bring myself.
That might be a place where you might get some leeway, maybe. I'm not sure, because the since so many lesser rails have been approved on so many historic buildings, you might, it's at least worth a shot.
I mean, those low profile ones on the Academy with those wires.
But see, then you get into a very modern language. We'll have to talk about that because, you know, half measures for safety and accessibility, mm-hmm. those scare me.
Yeah.
Because it's my stamp on it, right?
Well, we can talk with Sri, our building official, and see what he would allow. But, that could be horrible with the pickets. It will just be...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
See you all.
Great. We have a couple of great guests here.
Jan. Commissioners, here are Bruce and Heidi Kramer, the owners of the Blair Building in Washougal, and they have joined us now. If you have any questions, I'm sure you want to congratulate them in any event on their accomplishment and their sweat equity and all the wonderful things they're putting into the building. So.
Congratulations. It was one of the easiest nomination I've been a part of. Seems like Holly did a really good job.
Do you have any questions for us about being on the register? Or
I think the only question I have is, does the building seem significant enough to pursue the National Registry, or is that just a...
That's probably a better question for Holly. When the state code came down, did they give you kind of any... I know Nick had come down a few years ago. Did he give any inkling about that? Usually they'll...
I didn't really get a feeling for it.
Well, you should send it to them, maybe, and just see what they think. That's what I would
do. I mean, now that you have this document prepared, it would be so easy to get it in front of him and just get his thought. I do think that tightening up that criteria, particularly that criteria A, and kind of bringing it to specific association with, you know, instead of leaving it super broad and nebulous the way it is, would strengthen the argument.
You have most of the material that you need
for
the nomination. Most of it is reformatting it because the National Register nomination is a little bit different than the one that we have. And your hook for the National Register is probably emphasizing the last remaining aspect of this building. If anything's going to get it on the National Register, it's that it's the last remaining, you know, in the local area of that kind of building. For small scale, non-big historic event buildings that make it on the National Register, it's being the last one, that's the thing that gets them on.
But I do think it's probably eligible. I think they'd agree.
It's got a shot. You got all the stuff.
Yeah,
so.
It's an easy turnaround to do. Yeah.
The advice that they give at the Oregon Preservation Office and State Preservation Office, and I think it applies here, is, you know, with regard to all the criteria that it satisfies, kind of pick your best argument and kind of play that out and just make a really strong case for that, because I think, you know, rather than try and meet all of these things,
it all has to be one.
Focus on one.
Yeah.
And there are only four. we have sort of the two big ones and then those 11 others that it could satisfy, so.
Okay, give it a shot.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck.
And the State Register, too. That's a lower bar, and there's no administrative consequences that come with that, so it's more of an honorary recognition.
Okay. And they said they were going to update the app, so it'll be on that soon.
We were looking at replacing our stairway in the back, and these guys talking about the physical thing here. Makes me wonder what's going to be involved in that, since we're now part of this, sort of under this umbrella.
Since it's in the back, it's not as much of an issue.
The things that we look at are the things that really contribute to your building. And I was at your building, in your building, and it was neat. I was explaining to them, it's just kind of the way they did the upstairs of the apartment, and I see how you guys are moving forward with that, it's really nice that you're maintaining some of those elements. But I wouldn't say that something like your stairway was the contributing factor. It's your windows, and you know, you're keeping that main hallway where it's at. That sort of, those sorts of features seem very much more significant than probably that stairway.
If you plan on wanting to do something, just give me a call and we can talk about what we're going to do, want to do. And it'll probably be some kind of review, maybe a staff review, where we just document the change.
It's those exterior ones.
So we just want to see what you want to do. And so if it was wood, maybe these are wood now.
Well, those are wood now, yeah. And they don't conform to the code in any way.
Yeah.
But what we were considering was steel steps.
Okay.
Something that would be really permanent, for a back stairway.
Okay. Well, just when you're ready and you've got something that you're ready to move forward on, just give me a call and we'll get it all processed. Right.
Just do it before getting it on the National Register. But I don't think, those stairs, that I wouldn't consider a contributing element or anything, so I don't think there'd be a problem.
I would say again, like the way they've maintained that, the flow upstairs with the main hallway and the rooms radiating off that, I'm guessing those are a lot more significant than,
We just have to, just per code that we require us to document it so that we can show the change when people come up.
But the basic piece of advice is, I think, what I gave earlier to the park before you arrived, that come to staff early, and if you have some real questions, you can always come for an advisory meeting with the commission and get input early so that you don't have an unpleasant surprise later because you went down a path and didn't realize that there would be problems with it. Come early and get that information early. It makes the process much easier.
Congratulations once again.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Another item under new business, and boy, is this new business. After a very long stand here at the Coco Howard House, we will be changing the HPC meeting date and location.
Right.
And so, in keeping with open public meetings law, we need to make this official and communicate it and be consistent with that. So is there anything that needs to be added above and beyond that?
No, just that, what we have now is something in our bylaws, which is already wrong. we just want to make sure we do, cross all our T's and all our, especially we're moving locations and everything. So, and although we're going to be doing an overhaul of the rules and procedures after we finish the code stuff, we need to do this in the meantime. So, provided for all the parts that talks about where the location is and the consistency of the meeting day of the month. So, we've scheduled a hearing. It'll be quick and easy, but it'll for you to amend your bylaws. So, that'll be in July. So all you have to do is approve the changes as stated, and staff will make sure we take care of all the other communications that we need to do. We'll do a news release, we'll send it out to our email distribution list, we'll post it, and we'll buy a sign on this building for at least that first.
But the rules and procedures, we have to have a public hearing? Interesting. I would imagine if it wasn't the code.
We would imagine this is the code too, but we might be overdoing it just to make sure that we are clear. We inquired to MRSC, and the language in the Open Public Meetings Act is kind of generic, but lends itself to change like by resolution, by ordinance, by law. So we just want to make sure that we do
thorough.
Well,
it's 2 minute public hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. So
he's going to be training his whole life
for
that
one. And our next meeting will be at the Public Service Center. That's a temporary move.
Right.
It's not part of the
permit. Right. So it's a complicated one for our hearing notices.
July 4th.
Well, they're moving temporarily there,
so
you're
going to
vote temporarily there.
Yeah. Gotcha. So, any questions on that? You want to go to park there? I think it's after six. I'm hoping I think it's three in the meters. But there are street parking.
On street ones are certainly there. Yeah, I don't know if there's ones in the building.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. But if you get there a little bit early, which we all need to see.
Yeah, it's yeah. Okay. Yeah, and we can actually, we can get you probably any parking pass.
She's on tape.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Before his meeting?
Does that mean you can reserve spaces?
What's that?
Does that mean you can park?
No, let me get you. There's that back lot.
I know.
Can we put our counselors
spaces in
there? No. Denzel's.
We came down there for the...
We're getting a little punchy.
Award recognition, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Ship of award recognition. Yep. I couldn't find a place to park.
Yeah.
The only places were reserved spaces. Yeah. And so then, I thought I was going to be late.
Yeah. And after five, it clears out. Yeah. There will be plenty of parking in the county's open lot that's jury parking. So if you go into the back parking, you'll see jury parking lot, and that's open. Those are non-reserved.
Okay.
And that's where they direct the jury to park, and it's also just open space. Well, it's reserved for county people, but after five, it's open. So.
Okay. Yeah, there are a couple of people standing outside their car just talking. I'm like, okay, please leave. Good place to park.
So for the July meeting, I will not be there. So Sharon will be there. Danny, you will be here, and Mark probably will be here, and Keith. So you will have plenty of staff. And then we will start there again. So that's all for the meeting date and location change.
Okay. Old business.
We talked about it last time, about the lecture for mid-century modern, but also to raise awareness of tax incentives that are available, especially to commercial building owners. So that's just on standby. Brad from the museum offered to host it at the museum whenever we choose a date. He thought it'd be a good tagway for people that are interested in maybe nominating their building that they can find help at the museum with the research library and how the museum can help them do that. So we're thinking probably in September. We're waiting to hear one of our specific property owners in downtown Vancouver that we is interested. We want to make sure that they're available to come, so we're waiting on that, and then I'll get that scheduled and let everyone know. And we want to do a focus on mid-century modern, but I'm probably going to have him talk about the registers overall, and just so in case we grab other people that have buildings that are not in that style, that they still get something out of it, but to highlight it.
What's the timing of that?
September. Yeah.
So we had talked about potentially doing it in a mid-century modern building in downtown. Is this sounds like the librarian said?
Well, he offered it, and it sounded like a good tie. But I mean, if there's one that makes sense, we can look into that.
I don't think it's a big deal. It'd be a nice touch.
Okay.
But they still, I'm sure the big meeting room downstairs is
right
there.
True.
Okay.
And I'm sure he'll come, Brad will come and talk about what they have. So,
okay.
Good idea. Forgot about that.
Right.
So that's all. I'll keep you posted on that. The next item is the upcoming chair elections. We haven't had a July meeting in years, and that's in our bylaws that we do the officer nominations in July. So we usually do them in August, but since we have a July meeting, we're going to stick to our rules, right? So we're going to do it a little bit differently. We're trying to move all our commissions to a better process for chair elections. So that people aren't so we've had like some coups and surprises at other commissions. So in order to make sure that people, those that want to serve, and can, what we're asking is that you submit a letter of intent of whether you want to be chair or vice chair. You send it to us, and we're going to ask for you And we'll send an email, but if you want to write it down, June 27th, you can get that to us by email. So that we'll compile all of those and send them out to the commission so that you can review those and then make a decision at your July meeting.
Are only three of us
are
even eligible?
Yeah,
we've got four people leaving the commission.
You'll have
new people. But we won't have them in July, if we're voting in July.
It'll be the first meeting.
Sure. So who's leaving?
Rob and
Mark.
So, and then we've got at least one new person that will be there in July. That will be our one. So we can wait.
Well, you're not going to put a brand new person in this chair anyway.
It was just a thought. I mean, just to make sure that, you know, we have kind of a process that's...
I have no problem with the process.
Yeah.
Looks like your stuff.
Okay? All right. We'll start it. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
And then lastly, so as we have passed around the card, so Mark has had some medical issues and is going to have to step down from the commission. So there'll be another opening that we'll have to fill. So I wanted to inquire to you all as to the process that you would like to move forward for filling that vacancy. You recently convened a committee that reviewed applications that came in. They've moved forward, the recommendations from that committee has moved forward to City Council. They've made their decision and approved them last night on consent, which will then move to the county for their process. So your options are you can reconvene the committee and you all can pick someone from the applicant pool that you've already reviewed. But if you would rather do, or the other option is to start anew.
So just to be clear, will we have everyone confirmed for our July meeting?
Yes.
Okay, because I remember one year.
We tried to confirm,
so we had one month where we didn't get to attend.
We worked on that timeline this year, so that they had plenty of time to do it.
And we don't need to actually have anyone fill that seat. We actually have people, so right. We can make that decision too, that we don't need to actually go through this process again.
Oh, you mean just stick with six?
Yeah.
Good. It's a...
Quorums are.
It's a.
Because of like quorum.
That's an even number.
Well, when you submitted the information to the city, you gave us three candidates for two seats, mm-hmm. and the city council selected two. So there's the third person that you had submitted.
Yeah, true.
Did we have a good pool of candidates? It's deep enough to just pull an additional person.
We definitely were supporting the three candidates moving forward, so at least that would be my question. I'm just saying we have the choice not to as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's an option.
Who's the two that they went forward with?
Sean and Michelle.
Okay.
So Andy Gregg would be the remaining one.
So, I mean, I think we could move. I like the idea of still giving them a choice, so maybe move a fourth candidate and let them choose the third out of the third and fourth candidate. I think the only argument in favor of reopening it completely is I think we have some more interest in historic preservation now in our community because of recent events, and so we may actually be able to pull a candidate that we weren't able to pull before who might be really good. That doesn't mean that we have to do it that way, but it's something to consider.
Well, so there's Andy, who is a strong candidate and one that we recommended, and then there's also another gentleman, I forget his name, he's a PhD in history. You recall his name?
Danver? Stephen Danver?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was a very strong candidate, had a PhD in history from the University of Utah. So good credentials, I mean, and he was... right on the cusp, you have to kind of choose somebody to recommend, but I thought he was...
He's been on the history of the American West, right?
That was
person's best.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's another option. We could stick with six, or we could take the two highest candidates that didn't get selected, and we could submit those to council to make a decision on. Or we could throw our support behind Andy, since he has experience here. All options.
Yeah.
I think there is an advantage to having an odd number, mm-hmm. just so that there's. I know that sometimes you're going to end up even anyway, but just to kind of start with that deal of odd, that there's a tiebreaker. As far as how that extra person is chosen, it sounds like we've got a couple of good options. So, and I didn't view their applications for obvious reasons, so I would defer to your guys' judgment on that.
Yeah, we did take a lot of time deliberating over them, and we did rank everyone, so that's why the idea of opening it up again, to me, just seems like an unnecessary, I'm not sure.
And it's close enough that you can use the same
pool. I would just use the same pool.
But, whether or not we were supportive of three moving forward, so it would seem consistent to say, okay, we can have three now, those three, right?
And you did meet twice. We had two, mm-hmm. and then we already put a lot of time into it.
That's what I'm saying. We did already spend a lot of time. I'd do it again if you guys asked me to, but it'd be better if we just stuck with the decision that we just made.
I guess the question would be then is, would the city council...
You know what? After their experience last year where the candidates they forward on to the county council, none of them got selected. They just decided not even to interview. They just went with your recommendation. And I don't know how they picked Michelle for Andy. I love Andy. My concern about him is he lives in Palm Springs mm-hmm. half the year because I just had him on another committee and he missed more than half the meetings. Yep. So that's the only downside is that they're wintering in Palm Springs these days.
Mm-hmm.
But he was specifically asked that question because knew, and he addressed it by saying he's retired now, so it's not an issue, and he can be very flexible when he comes, including when you have to do the rounds to meet the presentation
for
cities. He's like, that's him, totally jokes.
Okay, that wasn't my experience with him this last year on the Art and Cultural Commission. But
that's news to us.
Yeah, so I told you.
Oh, well, you'd mentioned about Palm Springs, but not the absences from the Arts Commission, I don't think. But maybe you did.
If you just want to recommend, say, I have another opening we want to recommend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably would prefer two, but they would be okay with one.
See, I'm also remembering the guidance that we got about a year ago, which was that the council would like to make a choice or have some kind of a choice presented to them. Now, I don't know how this situation changes that, but the advanced two candidates
perhaps
a choice to make.
You want to just ask them if they want two candidates?
Sure, I can just ask.
Because we, obviously, like we said, we did rank them, and it wasn't, arbitrary.
I'm happy to ask, and I'll let Jackie in.
And if there's seven members, then maybe the geographic issue of being in Palm Springs part of the time isn't.
Maybe.
So would then you send just three candidates to the county, or?
So we would let this procurement go, or this process go, and they choose the one, and then we'd have another staff report going to the city council with either one or two names, depending on what they want, and then they would forward their. It's two separate processes.
The county can still
override.
What we give them is everybody and all the applications because they receive them initially.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
So the city gives a recommendation. They have the subcommittee's recommendation, and then they look at all of that and
make it work. The timing is that you probably have two new members by the July meeting, and then the other person will come in August.
I think we should give the city the option to choose. I think that's a very collegial approach to the process. We've already chosen who the fourth one should be for them to choose from. Stick with the original recommendation to the county that these are. Well, maybe I shouldn't speak on that, because they can choose whoever they want.
Right.
So, but I think giving the city the choice to weigh in on it is a collegial thing to do.
You're going to ask if they want to, or you just want to forward to?
I think we can just say, look, we had a resignation, here's the next two choices, and it goes to a subcommittee of the
council, and they pick one and make a recommendation to the overall council. So.
Yeah. So you're gonna propose two instead of asking?
Yeah, or maybe we just say, okay, here's our suggestions, we already forwarded, and then as an alternative, here's our next candidate. Mm-hmm. Then if they want to exercise that choice, they can. Mm-hmm.
If you give us that direction, we can start tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Sounds reasonable to me.
Just to double check. Some of them we had similar scores, like the same score. So did we have a clear number four, or was it any sort of a tie when we did our numbering? That's the only thing I just want to double check, that we only had one number four.
I believe so.
Can't remember, so. But I would move a motion of that. Whoever that number four is, and if we have several that actually have that same score, then maybe we do need to maybe reconvene our subcommittee and just take a look at it again. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't just based on the score, though, right? I mean, after we scored them,
because after we did the three, I didn't remember if we completely.
I think it was due to down
made sure that we had a full lineup.
Yeah, the scoring was just kind of the first step, and then, we discussed our scoring with one another, so mm-hmm. there was also a qualitative assessment that was made. So I don't think there's any issues related to how they were scored in terms of, who we ultimately went with.
Right, like I said, I feel very confident about our top three. I couldn't remember if we had gone down further on the list. And that's all I was wondering, is if we had said, okay, this person's really close, but I don't remember, that's why I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. You interviewed the top.
Yeah, I know we felt very comfortable with the top three. I just couldn't remember if we said on number four, five, and five or something that they were really close, but, I can't remember that. So that's why I said if you could just double check before we bring forward a fourth name.
Okay. So then, if you don't decide today, and then
they want to know if you have a rank. Do you have a ranking?
I don't know.
Think so.
I think you might need to shoot. Yeah. it sounds like you ranked the first go around.
We did.
And then you had interviews,
right.
And you kind of just talked through the top three.
We did.
Then we talked through the rankings.
And you chose five people to interview.
Mm-hmm. Chose four.
Four, right, because that was a pass-through. Right, so four interviews.
Right, then we did the interviews.
And you came up with two names.
Then we post-mortemed on the interviews. Uh-huh. And we came up with our names.
Right. So if you want to go back, you'd be like restarting that, going back to the pool and seeing if.
Okay, this is getting too complicated. Yeah. I'll go back and ask if they want more than one candidate. If they're okay with one, we'll just go with Andy.
That's the best solution.
Just saying. Yeah. If they say they want to have more than one choice, then we'll guys can figure out how to have the next choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, because the county council can overrule everything, so if you want to really go back and do that around interviews,
I just wasn't comfortable with the fourth name, but I wasn't sure we fully vetted.
And I don't mean interviews, but just like a meeting, like remember this.
Yeah. Yes.
Back over.
Right.
Name of your,
just to refresh our memory. Yeah. That's all. Just knowing that once they're on this commission, I think it's really important that we have people that we enjoy working with too.
So if they do want to, what are they going to do?
We're going to talk about it in July or August.
And since it's a subcommittee, couldn't this be done through email with the subcommittee? And we don't have to all be making the decision.
I certainly trust whatever the subcommittee says.
I would just like to say that I kind of an update on the whole demolition permit thing. I had an interview with Scott Hewitt with the Columbian, along with Brad Richardson, and I had spoken with Brad about specifically the Probstall house, and they were going to demolish, they're planning on demolishing it, and Brad reached out to me, and anyway, we had a good interview and sat down, so I'm kind of hoping that that might get this topic, sort of rolling again. Anyway,
brought up my concerns that I'm seeing around the county with a lot of houses getting demolished and not recorded. So, anyway. No, he said he'd let me know, and the interview was Friday, and it was like an hour and a half. I mean, it was a long, it was a good talk. And I meant to follow up before this meeting with Scott just to ask him, but he said he was like, "Oh, I'll definitely let you know." And
they don't.
I know. So, anyway.
Okay, one piece of new business to add here. I heard from Kim Gant today, so the CLD training is scheduled for September 25th. That will be at the Tacoma Art Museum, which is a pretty cool building, and we will be doing our encore presentation that we gave it by Wise Washington. So, September 25th, mark that on your calendar. And then, let's see. We would like to honor you, sir, in appreciation for all your time spent on the Preservation Commission. Jackie, Sharon, could you get out your camera here? So it's been good having you. I appreciate all the effort.
Oh, geez. You didn't have to do that.
Oh, yes, yes, we did.
Saw the chair, you
need to.
Let's.
That line's
yeah, that was all good.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm lighter.
We're sorry to lose you, but I understand your reasons, and you got the growing business.
Yeah, appreciate
you
got
to compete with Rock, and that's
yeah, that's right.
And then show it.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, ready?
There we go.
History.
Commission.
Commission.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for all you've done with us, Rob. We really will miss you.
Likewise.
And couldn't you have come back? We always have our former members come back. Yeah. That's how you start it, right?
Right. But we're particularly hard on former members.
No slack.
We actually want more professional architects to apply, so the word out to your colleagues for next year.
Yeah, the you should know better scowl kind of funny, you guys.
Okay, I would say.
And last word on Mark. It's really sad that he had to step down for health reasons. But I think he's comfortable with the decision that he made. So everybody keep Mark in your thoughts and or prayers. And we wish him well, and maybe he'll come back someday. Okay, so I think that's all of the old business and updates, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll open it up to public comment. If there's any last words? No. Everybody said what they need to say. If that's the case, then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, meeting adjourned.